And hello there, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. You know, sometimes the news is tough to take, especially when it's just shot at you all the time, you know, and you more just keeps coming at you, and it keeps coming at you. There's more bad news, and more bad news, and more bad news. You hear so much of it, you begin to wonder, how will I ever get safe? Is there any place safe? My food's not safe. My house is not safe. My river's not safe. My water's not safe. What do I do? What do I do? And it begins like almost like a pulse in your body. Danger. 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 I know what I'll do. I'll find a love. I'll have a love relationship. I'll hold on to somebody who I love so much. And I'll feel safe with them. And then they're going to put their arms around me. And then we're going to meet in magical, orgasmic splendor. And have this wonderful surrender. And say, ah, we're safe. For the moment. Till the doorbell rings. Till the phone rings. Till the cell phone goes off 5 times. And you say, who is that? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Yesterday, the issue of safety came up. And I asked the question, are we ever really safe? And are we safe from sounds like that? Are we safe? So once I was in a swimming pool, I remember. I was in a swimming pool. I was somewhere in the Caribbean. And I was floating in a pool. What a wonderful thing to be able to float. And being fat, it's wonderful because fat helps you float. See, it's good. It adds a little blubber. It's like a whale. So it kind of keeps you above water. So I ended up floating very easily and having a nice time. And suddenly these men were training to be snorkelers or things like that. And they jumped in the water all at once. And it disturbed my water. And I said, hey, I was resting here. And I went back in the pool and I closed my eyes and they jumped in the water again. And I said, I can't be safe anywhere. But what I had determined was danger was men jumping in a pool learning how to snorkel. And that made me tense. Well, why did I want to be tense? You can feel the tension growing. Like I'm making you feel the tension grow right now by me playing this very sound behind us. So the tension grows and the tension grows and we say, I can't be safe. What am I going to do? How am I going to become safe? What do I have to do to be safe? Oh, love will do it. Love, I'll hold my love. Oh no, my love, I just saw him talking on the phone with his friend. And he said something he didn't want me to hear. I'm no longer safe. Or are they cheating on me? I'm not safe. What do I do to get safe? Well, there are certain kinds of people who spend their lives looking for safety. And then there are another bunch of people who say, well, safe you are, safe you're not, I'm not sure, it doesn't really matter. But to a certain group of people in this world, safety is all that matters. I want to address that group. That group I call the nervous type. Now, how does it happen? How does it happen? They have an amygdala. They have this organ in their bodies, in their brain. And it fires. It fires these rapid, speedy kind of messages. And the messages go through the brain, and the brain says, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. I've got to find what's right. There's something wrong. Let me locate it. And when you do that, and looking over and over again what's wrong, you become what we know of as a worrywart. You're always worried. You're never safe. Very important people to have in our society because these are the guardians of the edges. They watch the edges. They make sure the no invaders are coming in. They're looking overseas. You know, they're looking out in the water. Some of us look out in the water and we see the seagulls. They spot the submarines that might be coming to get us. So we need them too. But worrisome people are always trying to find safety. And my conclusion to you today, my friends, is by the end of this program, let's get rid of the idea that safety has any meaning whatsoever, because it doesn't, in my opinion, in my humble opinion. But let's talk about the worriers first. And with that, I'm going to bring on Linda Vanella, who is very, very, very acquainted with this personality type.
Thank you, Amon. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm sure we'll have a great, interesting discussion. I think that we can all relate to that feeling of fear and a longing for safety on one end, and know, if not ourselves, we know other people who can very easily fit into that spectrum of the nervous type or the worry ward. And that person can often, yes, offer us the vigilance of being the guard keeper, but also at times we can see a sense of suffering that may in fact be not necessary. So maybe we can look at that today.
Why do they worry so much?
Many different reasons. They look for things to be concerned about. They get messages of, are you financially okay? Are you emotionally okay? Do you have a roof over your head? Are you educated enough? Will you be able to provide for yourself in your older years? Are you eating the right food? Are
so
you
they
staying
choose
healthy?
The messages is what you're saying.
Oh, yes.
So in other words, let's say you're nervous, period. And you're just nervous. Now, the first thing you do is you look for where's the danger. And then by picking out the danger, you start thinking about, am I safe? Do I have enough income? Do I have this? Do I have that? So it's all based on nervousness. Simple enough, take a Valium and everybody will be okay. We wish it were that simple, right?
Yes.
Take a Xanax and everything would calm down. That's what the doctors hope for. But there is something that keeps generating this feeling of distress, that once you have it, and once you live with this feeling of distress, you can never truly love anyone, because you're always going to be on edge. And I have never yet met a worrywart, somebody who is worried all the time, who could truly love anybody, except their own children, you know, but never in an equal relationship with anyone. It's impossible, because they're always looking for safety. I don't feel good here, I don't feel good here, I don't feel good here, I don't feel good here. And they keep complaining about where they don't feel good. And the mates try to help them out. Well, let me help you out. I'll help you out with this, I'll help you out with that, I'll help you out with this. And the mate turns around and says, wait a minute, nothing's too good. Nothing's good enough. There is no level of satisfaction for your worries. So therefore, why am I trying? And if it's a smart mate, he or she says, this is bonkers, I'm not going to be a part of it. But if it's a mate who's also a worrier, then they worry too. That's where dependency really gets in the way. You know, when you depend on somebody and they become this kind of person, and you're trying to keep hold on to them on one hand and let them go on the other, that's really tough, isn't it?
Sure, for sure. Because oftentimes, what happens with any kind of intimate relationship, you know, we kind of loop each other in on that dependence, independence kind of part of any intimate relationship. So when you see somebody worrying, the tendency would be, I think, to say, well, what can I do to help you feel less anxious? So then, of course, if you have two worriers, you know, perhaps, you know, it's a difficult situation because they both become kind of locked into that, to that sense. On the other hand, of course, if someone could assist somebody to become better aware of those senses and hone in on that, realizing that it is just simply a matter of a nervous condition that perhaps is really more of an illusion, and it takes on a world of its own, and it's maybe not something that is as real as their basic essence. Which, of course, is something that maybe we can discuss here, as to what exactly is that sense of worriness, worrisome. Not only, I think, is it on a biological level, but it can also be a very learned way of life. I know many people who've come from families, oh, my mother's a worrier, my father's a worrier, there's always, you know, people from the Depression. So we have all of those cultural, sociological kinds of things, along with, of course, the biological. So,
according to the American Sociological Association, marriage is a powerful heart drug in short supply. Married adults who underwent heart surgery are more than three times as likely as single people to survive the next 3 months. Kind of interesting, yet only 50% of our people are married. Do you know that the lowest, what did you say?
Less than 50.
Less than 50, yes. So what does that mean, less than 50 compared to what, Linda?
Well, less than 50 would be pretty significant.
Because
that's more than 50% of people that are not married. I think that's, I mean, and they say here in this research that it's the highest rate ever in the history of the country.
The highest rate of not marriage.
Yes.
50% of the people are married and 50% are not. Well, wait, and who are the 50% who are married to? Than the other 50%? Okay, let's figure this out. 50% of the people who are married, and less than 50% are not, or more than 50% are not.
Right.
Lowest rate ever in the history of mankind before they had marriage. Well, I guess Neanderthals didn't, you know, they exchanged wedding bands, they went to Tiffany's, they did, you know. Okay, but the thing is, if you are married, you have a better chance of surviving. You're going to stick around longer, it seems. We don't know if that's a good thing or not. We're not judging that. It means you live longer. That's all it says. But that kind of makes study. 500 patients underwent who went through coronary bypass surgery. The married patients were two-thirds as much likely to survive. So having a partner does something. Is it that you feel safer with a partner? That was became the question. Is it about safety? There's an excerpt from an article I wanted to share, who is a feminist, a well-known feminist, said, true love is not a wish list, but a wish feeling. And the number one feeling, even before the feeling of love, is the feeling of safety, she said. Without feeling safe, you'll never feel true love. You must have trust in your partner's character and prioritize finding a partner who is honest, communicative, empathetic, someone who values growing, so you can feel safe to vulnerable to trust your core self with him or her, and then together the two of you can support one another to grow into your best possible self. I think that's a beautiful description. The only issue I have here is the idea of safety. Because everybody's got things in their closet. Everybody's got something going on that's not as good as you think it is. Something is going to be unfolding. At one point, what if they get sick? You know, what if you have somebody who you love very much and then they get sicker and sicker and more handicapped and you go, blech, I don't love you anymore because now I can't take care of you anymore. Or what if you have somebody who is emotionally unstable and becomes more and more emotionally unstable and you look at them and you go, I don't like you anymore, but I used to love you. I mean, it was a wonderful thing that we had together. So the feeling of safety is what this person is talking about. Having that safety is kind of rough because there are things that change. How can you be safe if there are changing tides all the time? Feeling emotionally safe is one of the first signs of a good relationship. So what is it that we are feeling safe? We trust the truth. I trust that you're telling me the truth. But you see, I can't trust that you're telling me the truth because I noticed that you overreact to certain things. I notice that if I'm talking to my best friend and I decide to have a private conversation with him and I turn the phone away, that you get upset. So you say, what were you talking about? So I say, the ball game. Why do I say the ball game? Because I know maybe I could get away with it. Maybe I could just say the ball game and it'll all be over. Because I don't know even know what I was talking about. But you weren't talking about the ball game. I caught you in a lie. Ouch. Now the lie, you got to, what are you going to do about it? I can't say you caught me in a lie because that's no good. So I'm going to have to give you a lie to cover up the lie. Yes. No, it was about the ball game because I, the. So this engenders this kind of thing. I've noticed that you have unconscious, you have very strong reactions to certain things. Therefore, since you are a person who has strong reactions, I must lie to you. Anybody out there who is dynamic, who has strong emotional reactions, people will lie to you. They just got to. Because they don't want to be taking you on all the time. They want to try to get away. They want it to be peaceful. So if you ever are sensitive to being lied to, if being the truth, if truth is essential to you, you got to be somebody who never overreacts. Because people can't handle it very well. If you overreact, you can be sure they're going to lie to you when they need to, when they need to get out of a corner. Then on the second hand, you have to also be honest yourself. So if you're somebody who, for example, is passive-aggressive, if you don't tell people when you get angry, if you bury your own feelings, then they can't trust that you're ever telling the truth about your feelings. So they never feel safe with you. So this whole thing about safety gets to be funny. I say throw it out. I say let love be true danger. Let it be dangerous. Let it be that, you know, I don't really know if you're going to be okay. I don't know if I'm going to be okay. I don't know us.
Oh, John. Armand, I was thinking that, especially in our culture, that we're taught to be so security conscious. And, you know, we're raised to be security conscious in our culture. I mean, that, and always be backed up and always have security, and, you know, people enter into relationships for security sometimes, or, you know, so are you talking about this? So security and safety, it's all intertwined, and so what level is okay for
security? Well, what do you security? Think? What do you think, John? How secure do you live your life? How secure is it? How much of your life is based on being safe?
Well, I guess, you know, I've always thought, like, as I get older, I want to feel more secure, you know, as I get older. That's why, you know, I work more, I go to school more, you know, I want to feel secure.
Is that the reason you work more and do that?
I don't know.
It's a good question, right? Yeah. Or is it as you get older, you desire danger less? Let's look at it that way. Let's say that danger, unsafety, excites us. Keeps us going. The amygdala goes. The dopamine goes. The hormones are firing. You're alive. You're vibrant. You get older and you have, I don't care so much. I don't care so much. I don't care so much. And the nice thing about older people is they don't care so much. You know? Is it because they have gotten safe? No, because they're less invested in danger. Danger's a wonderful thing. It's like going out with a bad boy. You know what I mean? It's like, that's exciting. Oh, look at you. You could do anything to me.
Well, I think it changes at times in our life. As we get older, certainly we look for the different things. But I think that it there's a sense of not only safety from the other person or the outside of you, but a safety within yourself that I think frees our ability to love and receive love. And I think that, yes, it does change as we get older because I think we become more grounded in ourselves, and we don't have that need for danger. I don't think there's that rush. And, you know, I read this, you know, of course, knowing how the endorphins, when the endorphins increase, the serotonin decreases, which I think is quite interesting as well. So that we have, I think, as we age, a sense of maybe not needing as much excitement, drama, danger, whatever the words are that elicit that feeling of unsafety, but more of a feeling of comfort, of ease, well knowing that my moods are going to change, his moods are going to change, illness is going to inevitably come, So that we, I think, have a sense of more strength and conviction that, yes, it's going to come, but I don't need the excess danger. And when it's there, I think, it, you know, it tends to kind of flare up and say, can I, do I have enough to handle this? As I did when I was younger, I had more energy. Okay, I can handle this. A little flexibility, a little bit of danger, sure. But I think as we get older, we kind of seek out less danger, more security. And I think, as John has said, yeah, a more secure way of life that when I go home, I can close my door and feel at home and safe there.
So take the word safe out.
Mm-hmm.
I can close the door and feel at home.
Yeah.
Who cares about safe? There's no danger. There never was one.
Well, many people do feel, though, and again, that's part of our childhood. Many people have come from homes where they kind of, you know, want to grow up and have their own place, and they say, I don't want to repeat that feeling of unsafety. So many times people don't have that.
Well, here we go again. You're stuck on that word. Feeling of unsafety. It was never there. It's not a feeling of unsafety. It's just a feeling of danger. You see, it's quite a difference. It's like we're saying the absence of safety. No, it was dangerous. Where I grew up, it was dangerous. There was danger everywhere. You could walk out in the streets, boom, you could be dead tomorrow. That's where I grew up. Is that a feeling of lacking safety? No, that was a feeling of danger. You have parents who like to beat up their kids, and they forget that there are some kind of limitations. That's dangerous. So it's not that you're looking for safety. It's looking to remove yourself from a dangerous situation. And dangerous is not emotional. Danger, emotional danger is minor. Physical danger, that's major. Emotional danger, oh, you scared me, I'll run away. You know, that's just a smaller thing, even though I know for many people it could be really incredible, and those are the exceptions. But mainly when it comes to danger and it comes to safety, my friends, it's an illusion. You don't want to be in a physically dangerous environment. You can be in an emotionally challenging environment. That's okay. You can be there. You can challenge yourself. You can challenge the other person. And then you could also back out of it at some point if you want.
So maybe as we age, the feeling of freedom and the comfort in our own freedom is more is sort of... Well, I don't want to say freeing, but, you know, maybe that's what we fear as children. You know, maybe we're taught that freedom is not the feeling of just being free, because children are so free, you know, and then they get confined, and then they start getting scared, and then there's danger, and then, you know, all this stuff starts to pile on. So maybe as we get older, we say, wow, being free is better.
I would imagine so. Hey, the telephone number here is 212-279.
209?
209-2950. 2900. That was good. This is after, that was the fun drive. That's if they want to give money. This is after a month of fun drive. So now we got it straight. 212-209-2900 is our phone number. 279 used to be the phone number that we used to have when we were on 8th Avenue and 34th Street. We used to have a location there. 209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. We're talking about the feeling of safety in relationships, and is it even a feeling to be worth checking out? You know what I mean? Looking at. 212-209-2900. We're going to be taking your calls for the rest of the program today as we talk about this. It is illusory. Let's think about how much people make safety play a role in their life, right? So if a man's primary purpose, if the way that every animal, plant, and thing is born, is it has only three messages. Number one, eat and don't get eaten, right? That's the rule of life. If you're a flower and you're born, you say you got to get eat, but then you don't want to get eaten. That's why they put thorns on your roses, because they don't want you to get chomped up, because that's no good before you have babies. Eat and don't be eaten before you have babies. That's the rule of nature. This is what whatever God is gave us. This is whatever nature is gave us. Eat and don't get eaten before you have babies. Once you have babies, you can get eaten. See? But don't get eaten before you have babies. So then they take the male of the species and they load him up with this stuff. And they say, you take this stuff and you spread it around, find some eggs for it, right? And then when you match it, the two of you will make babies. Then you, the man, could die or you, the woman, could die. It's okay. We don't need it once we have the babies. All we want is the babies. So you take a man, and you take a male coqui, you know, which is a little frog from Puerto Rico, and you say, okay, now here you are filled with this stuff. I want to introduce you to this little girl, coqui. She's very nice. And they meet each other, and he dates her, and he's having a good time. But, you know, she doesn't have as big gills as the other one. And some part of his nature says to him, frogs with bigger gills make better mothers. So when the first one's not looking, he turns around to the second one and says, how about a little stupidity? And so then he moves with her. And the first frog says, how could you do such a thing? I'm not safe. I thought I was safe. I thought I had a relationship with you. We even went to therapy together. We did the coqui couples counseling, and it didn't work. Here you are off with somebody else. And he says, I don't know what made me do it. It was the devil made me do it. I saw those gills, and I was just stuck. So how does someone say you could be safe if at any moment... What if she's walking down the beach and she sees this muscle-bound, strong, handsome guy and she compares him to the guy she's with who may be a little more broken down, right? Hey, put your phone number in my cell phone, right? How is he going to be safe? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Do we have safety tires? Do we have safety travel? Do we have safe savings? Do we make safe investments? Do we have safety harnesses, safety nets, safe at home plate? Right? That's the way it is. Oh, sliding in there. Safe neighborhoods, safe communities, safe surgery. Everything has got to be safe nowadays. They tell you safe and they sell it to you, and you got to believe it. Safety patrol, public safety. All of this idea that, to me, is just an illusion. When you call back with your calls, I'd like you to talk about, I'd like you to examine yourself and this requirement of trying to establish safety and the possible illusion of having done that. Because it is an illusion. It's an illusion to think that you're ever really going to be safe in a relationship. You give it up. There's always a danger. That's always the excitement. Your partner can always die. Your partner can leave in a moment. Your children can leave in a moment. It's part of life. And with that in life, and living with that, we live a much more solid, real, maybe not as invested, but it's a more solid, real love. A more solid, real life. When we get back from our break, 279-2900, we'll take your calls. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We will be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Hi, this is Spike Lee, and you are listening to WBAI Community Radio in New York City. WBAI exists almost entirely on your support.
Five,
please be generous.
Four, three,
thank you very much.
Go.
And this is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind. Two phone numbers for us today. Today we have an unusual configuration. 212-209-2900. And 2902. The 2901 has skipped out. It didn't feel safe. It ran away. So you have to call on both numbers if you want to reach to us. We have somebody on the line right now. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, let's take one of your calls.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good.
So I think this is a very fascinating topic and subject matter, and what I wanted to posit was that another way of thinking of this obsession or culture or ethos of security and safety in relation to relationships would be our tendency to want to build a home. And this notion of building a home, from a philosophical standpoint, is a conservative view. And what I mean by that is what this building a home attitude is, that you want to posit a story for the changing world, like your own narrative, or understand yourself as this entity or spirit, some underlying reality that, you know, that will sustain throughout change. And I think
that's very, very interesting. What's your first name?
Nick,
you know, this fascinating. Let's just start with the idea of a home, building a home.
Mm-hmm.
See, now that's an interesting thing, because home is a feeling more than a place.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I saw the other day, I saw the new Planet of the Apes, the prequel. And it's a very, very interesting story. It's very fascinating. And at one point he says, you know, I am home, meaning that I've found this place inside myself that feels solid. So now we take home and we build that into a house. And we say, if we have a house and we do all these things to it, like we have to put a moat around the house, right? We call that our lawn. And then we have to put alarms around our house. And then we have to light our house and then feed our house and gas our house. And at some point, we can make it almost impregnable, and we're safe. And it never ends.
Well, I think it's also a little bit restricting. What I was trying to say is another style of living, which is more liberal, would be living nomadically.
Right.
Where you see that, just like our everyday living, and even how we come to our own thoughts, its totality is not accessible to us. So what you have is that there's always changing. You're always in stages of becoming. And then the story and the meaning we put in our lives is just a dimension amongst many other things. And if you were to humble yourself to that and say that my security, safety, and my home does not replace the universe, I think then you become liberal. And this means you can experiment. You could say, well, it's okay that I make a story. It's okay that I say you and I are in a committed relationship, or I am this person, you know. But what you shouldn't do is say this will substitute and define me in my totality. And I think when you can
but
see
Nick,
that,
Nick, that's rough, isn't it? How do you form relationships? Where do you find people who are going to step up to that level of integrity and authenticity to greet you there, and not want the dangers?
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying you should throw the baby out of the bathwater. I'm just saying.
No, I'm not saying you should. I'm saying, what about for you, Nick? Have you found that kind of love in your life?
I unfortunately have. I'm in a very relationship where we kind of try to cultivate that spirit. You know, like, and it makes you more forgiving, for one, or not necessarily forgiving, but accepting and just kind of having an empirical attitude where you say, well, let's produce things. It's not so much that I need to say one thing is right or wrong, like about like the notion of home as being this defining thing, but rather that, well, we're like engineers of our lives, where you stress things out and see if they work or if they fail, and in a sense, it really is no failure if you have that experimental attitude. But I don't know. I guess maybe this is seeming a little bit abstract.
Doesn't seem as abstract to me as you're saying, Nick. It sounds very specific. Sounds like you've dedicated yourself to your own authenticity. Sounds like you've found a partner who can travel with you, which is a lovely thing to hear. You know? And of course, the challenges all come up. At some point, somebody turns around and says it's not good anymore, and the other partner says, okay, let's look at it. Let's see if we can save it. But if we can't, we'll let it go.
Provisional. In a way,
yeah,
it's like something you cultivate. But I wouldn't want to say there is this identity throughout the whole thing, other than that notion of identity being a concept, like a tool you could use, you know, to help push forward something else, you know, something that's going to outrun you, or the flow of life, which is like not restricted to us, but goes through us, you know, something like that. Well, that sounds a little abstract.
I know it sounds abstract, but I think you're getting all of us, and I appreciate it. Nick, thank you very much for your wisdom.
So don't build a home, be liberal.
Don't be home and be liberal and be a nomad. Maybe a tent is not a bad idea. 212-209-2900 or 209-2902. Do not call 2901 under any circumstances. I love giving rules. I like making rules, you know. Don't ever call 2901.
Can I just say something in relation to that call, Nick? I just want to say that what I thought you said was really wonderful. And I think that what you're speaking about is like home is where the heart is. And what your relationship is truthfully, whatever words you want, is the essence of growth and the essence of merging of two people who can then not get caught up in these other words and illusions or whatever we want to call danger or safety, because you're really at the root and the core and the essence of what relationship is, and that's where our home is. So thank you, Nick. Thank you.
Call me irresponsible.
Hold on, Carla. We'll come to you in a minute. Just stand by.
Unreliable. Throw in. Undependable too. Do my foolish alibis bother you? Well, I'm not too clever, I just adore you. Call me.
And Nick.
Unpredictable.
Irresponsible. 212-209-2900, 212-209-2902. Do not call 03. Hi there, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and what's your name?
My name is Claudia from Brooklyn.
Hello, Claudia from Brooklyn.
I haven't called in a couple of years, and I was a young lady who had went through psych units for quite a while. And the reason why I called is because, I don't know, when I was on my own after my first marriage, I thought by studying martial arts, it would make me safe and secure. Yes, it made me secure in the person that I am. But what I have noticed is that when I have health issues that are acute and chronic, and then I end up in the hospital, by the time I get out, I'm trying to restore myself upon coming to my home, feeling secure. But what is security?
Right.
And most of the time I feel that if I walk the safe lane, if I keep myself from whatever activities that seems to be out of my range as far as me not wanting to participate, I walk the other way. But when it comes to security, it's just basically the basic necessities. Do you have this? Do you have that? Okay, if you have all those things, you speak to a few friends, but then again, you only know your real friends when you're very ill. So when it comes to security, it makes me feel that it's always intangible. But at the same time, the moment I get ready to walk up my door, I'm armed to secure myself.
That's right.
Mentally, emotionally, spiritually.
You know, Claudia, you talk about when you're in a damaged condition, and I mean when you're broken, and a lot of people who are older feel like this. Let's say you've got some advanced lung disease or something like that, or you've got some illness.
I'm 55 now.
What'd you say?
I'm 55 now.
Yeah, so let's say you're broken. Your body's broken, your heart's broken, your soul is broken in so many ways. Then the first thing you do is you try to get by with being surviving, taking the step-by-step survival. You want to be able to go from this moment to the next moment, baby steps, one step at a time.
Yeah.
Within the baby steps, as you get, let's say you're climbing your apartment to your home to your apartment, along the way you see a little piece of ribbon on the stairwell, and you look at it and you say,
yes.
Oh, is it? Yes. Go ahead, talk about the ribbon.
And what's so interesting is I noticed that I, because of my brokenness, or let's put it this way, I don't want to show the brokenness, but my isolation has caused me to feel insecure. And so I have gathered myself across the street with this church, and they give me hugs and kisses, and it's amazing how
amazing.
The need for companionship, the need for a man relationship, is null and void, because those basic needs of just reaching out your hand, kissing somebody on the cheek, that strong hug, it lasts for hours.
And hours. You know, Claudia, you're getting one right now from everybody who's listening.
Thank you, and I do get that from WBIA.
Yeah, we're here. Thank you so much, and thanks for hanging around, and thanks for sticking with us.
Thank you so very much, and you have a good day.
Thank you, Claudia.
Bye-bye.
The Warriors. Not the Warriors. See, the Warriors who could have been Warriors become Warriors. And when they become Warriors, they're not effective on the planet anymore. Then they do nothing. They spin their own wheels. Me, 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 me. I got to take care of myself. I got to get my income. I got to get my money. I got to get to this. I got to get to that. I got to. The Warriors. Okay, I'm here. That person needs a hug. I'm moving over there. It's one of the things I love about you, Linda, what you do with people so strongly, and the way that you embrace people and let them know that there's somebody of power who's there for them. 212-209-2900, 209-2902. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon, Armand. My name is Darlene, and I'm still, like, just listening to that last caller. Like, I understand, like, just I just felt for her so much. Like, I still feel that right now because, like, I just heard, like, the whole story, and it's, like, I feel where she's coming from. And
have you,
like,
felt like that?
I feel like that now, but it's, like, I still put on my armor, and I have to continue with my day, because if I don't continue with my everyday things of life, then how is everything going to get done? You know, and
what do you have to do, Darlene? What are the things?
Are you keeping
a baby? You have a baby?
Yes, I have a child.
You have a six-year-old child?
No, I have a four-year-old daughter.
A four-year-old daughter.
Yes, and I'm a single mom. I'm a young single mom. You know, I work. I'm trying to go back to school. You know, I live by myself. And, you know, it's hard, you know, to pay bills by yourself. And, you know, unfortunately, her father hasn't helped in the past couple of years. And I'm still being, you know, a nice person to him. But, you know, we're not going to get into that. But the whole thing about security and feeling home and safe, like, I feel that. Like, everyone has their own opinion about how they feel safe, you know, what they've gone through in life and stuff like that. You know, I've gotten hurt. I've gotten hurt really bad. But what keeps me going is my daughter. Because if I don't do it, who else is? You know, when I'm with her, I feel safe and I feel home. And I feel that's, like, the only person in the world that truly loves me and I can never doubt it, you know? And she's still young, so it's, like, you know, it's not like she's a teenager telling me, no, I hate you, you know? She's still young. She's still a baby, and that's my partner through it all, you know? Like, my little serenity, like, that's my heart. That's my everything. And
so let me ask you something. I want to get this one down. Darlene, when you had your baby, before you had your baby, once you got your baby, did you say to yourself, now I've got to protect my baby? I got to make sure my baby's okay? Is that become yes. that became a dedication of your life? Before you had your baby, did you say that about yourself? I got to protect myself. I got to protect my life.
Of course, that's how everyone feels. Like that's how you originally feel, and then when you have a child, it's like you know, you're the protector, and you know you have to.
So I wonder if part of the reason that people don't have children, why people have so many children, is because they just want to make something safe.
So many. I know. I say the same thing about having so many children. I just have one. I know. I don't need financially. I don't need another. I don't need another child. I really don't. Like me and my daughter is enough. Like I don't need. No. And you know what? Nowadays, like how you said, like half of the people, like I actually believe that like half of everyone is married, and then like even the people that are married, it's not like before. Like even though I'm young, you know, I'm 22 and I'm gonna be 23, but you know, I've lived life. I had my daughter at 18, and I've been living on my own since before that. You know, I always been independent since I was younger. I didn't like I had a stable home, but. Not, you know what I mean? It wasn't a good communication skills growing up during my teenage years, and I wanted to be rebellious like every kid does, you know, and I met my daughter's father when I was, like, in junior high school. He was, like, my first love, you know?
And Darlene, it's been a long, long, young road for you. You sound like yeah. a very brave person who's gone a very big distance. I want to thank you for your travels.
And I've seen how life is, you know? I've seen since I was 13 till now that I'm 20, I'm going to be 23, and it's like, it's crazy how, you know.
So how often, let me ask you something, Darlene.
So many couples and parents together, and it's like nowadays you don't even see parents together by the time the kid is one.
I know, Darlene, we're going to have to go soon. Hold on a second. Here's the thing I'd like you to do. I'd like you to try as an experiment to leave the word safe. Out.
Be the word what?
Safe. S-A-F-E. Take that word safe and take it out of your vocabulary when you talk to your child. I'd like to eliminate it. I'd like it to not even be something a child should have to be concerned with. Just consider it. Because every time you tell somebody they're safe, you remind them they're in danger. And just a thought, okay? Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling in, Darlene. Thank you. 212-209-2900 and 212-209-2902. But don't call 04. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi, Armand?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Sandra. I'm calling from Brooklyn.
Hello, Sandra.
Thank you so much for your show today. It has really hit home. I'm 53. And 52, rather. Turned 52 this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And somehow, Sammy Davis Jr.'s song, I've Got to Be Me, has been resonating with me. I've been trying to figure out how do I balance being me and being the true me and being... other things to other people that I think I should be. How does one strike the balance?
Boy, that is a difficult one, isn't it?
It's a constant struggle.
Especially since you have such a tendency to take care of people.
Exactly.
See, that's the disaster. The disaster is if you're a caretaker, then you don't know how to do it. How do I still take care of people?
Yes.
You know, maybe Linda knows. Linda, what do you think?
Well, I think that's a little bit of a challenge. When you are naturally a person who finds great satisfaction in this world by caring for another, mm-hmm. I think it oftentimes happens in our 50s when you stop and you say, wait a minute, you know, what about me? So I think that's where the song is resonating with you.
Yeah.
Sandra, and I could certainly understand that. And I think sometimes we feel like we lost ourselves
exactly.
in our relationships around us, whether it be our children, our loved ones, our friends. And then we get to a place where am I? You know, where am I? So I think while we speak about this authenticity and being true to ourselves and, you know, it all sounds good, but oftentimes that's a little bit challenging, Sandra. So I think you're on the right track, and I think that what it is, you know, not to criticize yourself, because I think that that's coming from a loving place in your caring of others around you. But I think perhaps now we just need to add to it, not take away from that, but just add a little bit more of Sandra. Let's care a little bit more for Sandra, the way that Sandra's caring for others.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
Nice talking to you, Sandra. 212-209-2900-2902. Last caller. Let's take one more, Michael. Hi there. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Nice to talk to you.
Got 2 minutes. Let's go.
Okay. It was very interesting to hear you talk about safety, especially in a relationship. I'm in a very unsafe relationship. There are lots of trials that the relationship poses for me. The person that I'm with suffers from a mild mental illness, and it's very up and down. I never know where I am at with him. We've been together for 30 years, so I guess something is working. The interesting part, I'll cut it short since we don't have much time. The interesting thing I would like to put out is that when you talk about safety, everyone around me tells me, why are you with this person? He gives you such a heartache and worry. Why don't you go find someone else or you know, spare yourself all the suffering? I've been to two therapists because I myself suffer from depression, and I saw two therapists. One was mainly still very far, too far to
talk. Well, listen, we got 30 seconds. Let me give you a quick answer, okay?
The therapist also said this, and
let me move this quickly.
Go
wait
there.
Listen to this. Okay, listen. If you have a mild depression, one of the things that you like about mild depression is the fact that if you leave it alone, it's going to slide into a further depression. Therefore, it's always some kind of preference to pick somebody who's erratic. Because they're erratic, what they do is they keep your depression off the bottom floor. Therefore, in some way, his mental challenge in some way challenges your depression. And in that way, they could be collaborating together and they could work just fine.
Mm.
So this may be, I know it doesn't sound like it's the ideal, but it may be just about perfect. And so what they don't know and they don't understand is that you guys serve each other, just as your depression helps serve him by keeping him from going off on loose edges. You know? So we've got to get going, unfortunately. I
thank
wish
you
I had
for
more
that
time.
Thank
sure,
you, very much
you
for
can
that
email me if you want. We can talk even further. Armand@thepositivemind.com. Be back with you next Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. It's been a pleasure.